And we're back here once again with another episode of the Iron Man Podcast, episode 402 with Mr. The Phoenix Press. Once again, it's going to be his fourth appearance. He's here to basically, you know, steal all my clout and chill for his next book coming up, actually. And I did end up reviewing both Screecher comic books, actually. So I know people were waiting on those reviews. The problem with that is it's actually a good problem, which is I'm going to be doing a entire YouTube channel dedicated to comic book and manga content. Ooh. So the main one you see is going to be all based around the same movie, TV stuff you've already seen before, or this channel is going to be based around comic book news, comic book reviews, comic book news, and manga news, and manga reviews, and all the other stuff, actually. So, yeah, and indie comic books would go there as well. And, you know, I don't care how many views an indie comic book review would get. I just would only care about, obviously, talking about the book in general. That's why I'm at the point now where I don't really care how many views a freaking video gets. I just want to just do the video itself. That's the fun part, mm-hmm. you know, of it. Well, Nick's back, and he's been having some interesting discussions surrounding like Iron Age and, you know, indie comics actually. And
fights. Yeah. I figure I let a lot of fire in a few butts. Like I'm actually on the Friday Night Frenzy. We're actually going to be doing a big one about egos in indie mm-hmm. comics and how egos might be the thing that's ruining indie comics. You know, mm-hmm. we got like Razor Fist, Ethan and Eric all kind of pawing at each other. And it's just, can we just make cool stuff and like be cool? Like, I don't know. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think it's Razor Fist. I haven't read anything that guy's did. I'm not saying it's bad or anything. It's just nothing I've come across yet.
I watch his YouTube videos. He's a great orator. I don't agree necessarily mm-hmm. with everything he says, but mm-hmm. he's usually pretty right on the money.
Then there's the ones coming up now. I mean, there's the recent stuff about like ripoffers. Mm-hmm. Just weirdly going after Nerdrotic's wife, which is so cringe. Because what's crazy is I didn't even notice that was Nerdrotic's wife when I talked to her. Because when we went in the bar, she does the whole, you know, women should be doing their jobs. They should be the secretaries checking people in. She was the, after the security guard, she'd be the person checking your wristband, see what you RSVP'd who and all that stuff. She was really nice, actually. I actually didn't know that was Nerdrotic's wife until the next day. And I was like, you're actually Gary's wife? And she was like, do I look like Gary's wife? And I was like, that's a trap question. And I don't want to answer that. That's how you get destroyed.
And she was probably like, I respect that.
Oh, God. But I did get a chance to talk to Nerdrotic and Jeremy and all those people. And crazy. They actually gave me some pretty interesting YouTube advice, actually. They were like, you look like you still got it. Just, you know, just things that they basically just told me things I already knew. And I was like, you know what? You're right. I got to start putting my head into the fucking soil like an actual NPC and just downloading it. And just go for it. Good Lord. Mm-hmm. So, remember the last time I was on your show, we were talking about, like, indie comics and all the stuff like that. Now, I will say this, because this doesn't sound kind of mean, but I like being that guy, because, you know, I'm just mean in general.
Go for it, bro. Go for it. Make me cry.
You've been to comic book shops before. Like, you go to movie theaters, right? I mm-hmm. think enough people don't go out enough to actually see the bigger picture. So, on my very last day there, we went out to Cosmic Comics, and it was Iron's favorite comic book shop. It was a great shop. And before that, we went to Rogue Comics, actually, that had a lot of back issues. And I was just enjoying just hunting down and back issues for random stuff that I was looking for, going to Cosmic Comics and getting all the new stuff that I wanted. I think a lot of people need to legitimately go outside a lot more, you know? Like,
yeah. Just based off of, like, seeing how people interact online, I think a lot of the people in this online indie space just keep themselves the online indie space. Like,
yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. I table at a lot of comic conventions. I have books in comic book stores. Like, I actually physically go to the comic book store and say, hey, can you carry my comic? Sometimes I say yes, sometimes I say no. Yeah. I'm actually going to be signing for a free comic book day event for the second year in a row. Like, I spent time developing relationships. Yeah. I spent time developing relationships with my local comic book store owners, you know? Mm-hmm. And I just see a lot of these people, and that they're just like, wait, conventions? Like, should I do, like, just the idea of tabling at a convention is completely foreign to them, and I'm like, they think the indie spaces all revolve around, you do your crowdfund, you put the book out, yeah. then you do the next one, which, mm-hmm. that's just one piece of the puzzle, but a mm-hmm. very important one, but you also need to do other stuff. Like, I'm reluctantly building my YouTube channel. Like, I don't like YouTube. It's not my thing, but I need to do it to get my name out there. So be it. You know, I enjoy aspects of it. I like talking to people, as you can tell. The conventions are fun. The conventions are fun. I love those.
That's what I was telling people like that too. We had that exact same conversation outside of a bar next to Iron's house. I was like 5 minutes away. He literally was like, a 5 minute walk to that freaking bar, which is like, wow. These cons should be probably a next step for a lot of these people. Like the fact that you told someone that and they were like, should I go to a con? And that is, oh my Lord, I hate people so much. That is literally what all the pros that you idolized did to get their name out there.
Like the connections I've made from cons.
Right.
Like, here's the thing. Like, obviously we're all plugged in with the online scene. That's great. But you also need, if you live in a metropolitan area, you need to be plugged into your local comic scene. So I live in Metro Detroit, okay? Metro Detroit, Michigan. And there's actually a pretty active comic book scene just here in my local area. You know, there's a bunch of comic stores, there's a bunch of creators. And so, like, I do these cons and I see a bunch of people. I network. Mm-hmm. You know? And it's like, I don't know.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, you know, networking comes into play a lot too. And also what helps even better is seeing the person face to face. Like actually talking to them, eye contact, hand gestures, body language, all that stuff matters. And if you have a good, really good interaction with someone, go a long way. And just going to those shops, like especially Cosmic Comics toward the very end, like going in there and seeing all the trade paperbacks or the omnibus and all that stuff. And I get bigger shop, a lot more stuff than the newer stuff. I don't know, just being in those environments, it just changes your mind. Because like seeing things made and seeing them online and seeing them done in real life is just so much different, actually. And the thing you talked about too.
The thing is, also, if I can just share one piece of wisdom, if you want to get your comic into a shop, don't call them. Actually go into the store and bring your comic book with you. Like, because these comic book shop owners, it really helps. They see your face. They see you interact with them. Be polite. Be nice. Be courteous. Also, be nice and courteous to the shop staff, because more than likely what you're going to do is you're going to go to the front counter, say, hey, can I speak to the person who buys the comics? And then they're going to get the owner. So you need to be nice to those people. Be nice to everyone working there. Even the janitor, all right? Because you never know. Like, you'd be rude to one person, and then they say, oh, don't buy from them. They're rude to me. Or, but if you're nice to everybody, you're like, oh, yeah, I remember that guy. He was really polite and nice. They're more likely to buy from you. And they see your face. It's like, oh. Like, they see you walking, like, oh, hey, it's that guy I met. I like him, you know, whatever. Like, phone calls are good for follow-up, but it's better to be in person. And also, bring the book, because they're going to want to see it. Also, the other big thing is you need to have a wholesale price and a resale price, okay? Mm-hmm. I'm just dishing out trade secrets here. So, for example, let's say you sell your comic regularly for $5. You give it wholesale to the shop for like $4 or $3, depending on what your print cost is, how much of a profit that you want to make.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is they can do it on consignment, where like they take it and then you get money from when it sells. Depending on the shop, they might prefer either or. You know, don't be afraid to do either. Like for me, my biggest thing was I was so afraid to do consignment. Because, I want to make my money for my comics. Now, and yes, you actually do make, I feel like you do make more money selling your comic depending on how much the wholesale price is, but it's all about getting it out there, especially at the early stage.
Yeah, and this is something that I know Iron mentioned, and then a lot of people don't understand with a lot of these shops is, well, you would know this, since you've made deals with them. For anyone who doesn't understand how a shop works, I it's crazy because I actually have people who've owned shops. I could just ask them these questions. They would tell me. But a big thing a lot of comic creators don't know is their shops resolve around interest. Like, just think like movies, right? If a movie comes out, fans are interested, you go and see it. Think of like comics. There's interest for a comic. Shops order it based off your interest rate. Not like your actual credit card rate, your actual interest rate. Mm-hmm. Then they buy the book. If your indie comic, not saying yours specifically, but if your indie comic or anybody's comic out there doesn't have any interest in people, they probably don't want to buy it. They're going to be like, that shop hates me. No. If your book, they buy that and they doesn't sell, it just rots on the shelf. That's the point of it.
And on the flip side, okay, let's say the shop buys 5 copies, okay?
Yes.
And then let's say you've developed enough of a local following. You tweet out, hey, my book is at this shop. Go and buy it. And then that day, Five people go in the shop and buy the book. They sell it out in a day. The comic shop goer is like, holy crap, this book sold out in a day. You know, five copies in a day. You know, I need to buy more. It feels weird because this is like simple logic, but simple logic seems to be, I don't know, oblivious to some people. I don't know.
Yeah, there are people out there that are like, why don't comic book shops carry indie comic books? Okay, guys. Okay, average person.
Because most of them don't sell.
Yeah, that's the thing. Despite what people say on here, that their books are really, really good, and I'm not knocking anyone's work for the moment. I like to do it, but you know, for argument's sake, yes, your work might be really good. You probably put a lot of money into it. I'm not saying you didn't, but customers decide that. Like, you could circle jerk off you yourself and me, but let's be honest here, the actual customer doesn't see it as valuable work. That's all that matters, actually.
Let me be honest with you. Most of these comic stores want to support local artists. Like, the ones I've talked to,
all the
comic shops, they would love to support a local artist. They would love that. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, I've had my books, and like, I don't really put them as much anymore because even my books have struggled to sell in shops. Like, they've sold, but not they haven't done gangbusters, so I don't really do it as much anymore.
Oh yeah,
I do it sometimes, but like even my stuff struggles, and I'm fully willing to admit it. It struggles to sell because I'm a bit of a smaller artist. Like, I have a bit of a following, but like it is what it is.
Yeah, and people have to understand it from a business point of view. There's no sense for me to buy your book from you, and I can bear Paper Factory, guys, not just indie books. There's Marvel, DC, Image, Dark Horse, Boom, Valiant, okay? Keep in mind, well, Valiant releases like one title a month, but you guys get the point, right? They can barely
sell. That's still more than most indies.
Yeah, people need to factor in. Not only do these books release weekly, there's the big titles that come out monthly, but you need to understand, they can barely sell the stuff that they already buy right now. They can barely sell that. Tackling on someone's underground, indie, whatever you want to call it, underknown character. It's like
when the fourth Captain Marvel in a year fails to sell, what makes you think they're going to want to take a chance on something that he has no name recognition?
You know, someone told me, man, someone's like, we'll put it in the front of the store. Yeah, put the random character nobody knows in the front of the store. That's going to draw more eyes in the store.
Oh, trust me. I've had comic shops. Yeah. I literally put my comic in the front of the store and it's still somewhat sells. Like, I've had my comics kind of sell at stores. I'm not saying I put them on the shelf and they all brought. I'm not saying that.
No, I'm saying
it's like they don't sell gangbusters.
It's the thing where the thing that gets people to buy a book. Writing guess is important. I know people have kind of went back off. What's more better, art or writing? The thing people need to understand is art. The reason why it's a little bit more important. I'd say it's 60-40. I think 60 is the art, 40 is the writing.
Here's how I put it. Okay. In the artist versus writer debate, art brings you in. Writing keeps you there.
Yeah.
That's how I put it. Like, an amazing cover will catch people's eye. But the thing is, great art without a great story is useless. They'll be like, okay, this is great art. This is a problem we had in the 90s, where we had like literally some of the best artists ever to hit comics, but the writing was crap. And that's why comics didn't sell. It wasn't until the late 90s, early 2000s, where more of an emphasis was put back on writing.
Yeah.
And we still had great art, that comics kind of rebounded back a little bit. Writing saved comics. Our art almost killed it. That is a hot take, and I will stand by it.
I know a lot of people have seen that recent video of this person that did like the worst Batman comic book ever made. I'm gonna do videos similar to like that when I had my own, when I started up, where it's the one that's All-Star Batman, that's art by Jim Lee. Just use that as an example. I haven't read that story yet, so I assume myself, but it's one of those things where, art got people in, but enough people started reading, they were like, wow, this is actually trash. Now, the thing is, you would know the writing was bad if the art didn't actually attract you to buy the book. You know?
Yeah, and I'm not saying like writing is the like be all end all most important thing in comics. Yes, I'm a writer. I'm biased. I'm acknowledging that.
But obviously, you're better than Martin Scorsese. Obviously, you know.
I'm trying to think of like. See, there's this thing I like to call artist who write syndrome, where when you have like a hotshot artist be like, "Oh, I can write. I can do a story," and then you get Spider-Man number one by Todd McFarlane. And then there's a lot of, like, to be fair, he did get better. But if you read that Spider-Man number one, it's all captions, except for like one scene where he's talking and the writing is terrible. It's like, it's like basically that issue is like one long narrated montage. Like, oh my god, it's bad. And you see this a lot with artists who think, oh, writing, oh, it's simple. And they have like the worst dialogue, like the plotting is terrible. And this is an epidemic of artists who think they can write.
It's a two-way thing because, the art definitely does get people in, and it definitely could be the definitive factor to where the rest of people buy the book. But
a good cover can make or break a book. I will happily admit that.
And then if you have another book that comes out in that series that someone took a chance on at a local comic shop, well, if that writing was absolute dog shit and no one cared for it, well, it doesn't matter how good the art was. No one's going to buy that book anymore. It's just how it is, you know? Mm-hmm. I think the way I always phrase it is good art gets you in, good writing makes you sales. Every issue afterwards, because
it's basically an extended way of saying it's like good art draws you in, good writing keeps you there. That's
always been a thing for comics, you know, where like, you know, issues 1, 2, maybe 3 get you in, but if the writing is really bad by issue 3, people just drop it off. They just completely just go, I'm done. That's it.
Yeah, this is why I dog so much on like the comics boom era of comics. You know, like a lot of indie comics seem to be like hyper fixated on this era for some weird reason. I don't know.
They want to be Tom McFarlane, man. If you create the next Spawn, you're filthy rich.
Yeah, you're not Tom McFarlane. You're not Rod Lightgo.
How do you know that? I could be Tom McFarlane, right? Nope. Turns out I'm just me, actually.
Well, I'm sure if you became a Hellspawn, they'd try to turn into a human, you'd turn into a white man, so.
How do you know that?
Because I read Spawn.
I will say it.
That actually happened in the comics. That happened in the comics. That's what I'm referencing.
Oh, people don't know. That's a reference to there was a Flash story back in Rebirth where it's in the TV show too. They did a good job in the TV show too in season 8 where Reverse Flash was pretending to be someone and he took off that person's skin. It was just gorgeous, amazing cover. Reverse Flash is a pretty crazy character.
He's a special person. I'll give you that.
Certainly one of the villains ever made.
What I was saying is the problem with the 90s era is it was the era of the rock star comic artist. And like I said, you had some of the greatest artists to ever hit any comics. Tom McFarlane, Jim Lee, Rob Liefeld, you know, Mark Silvestri, you know, some of the best art we've ever gotten. Okay. The problem is they got too big for their britches and they started to get more control of comics. I think for the detriment. Okay. Like you wonder why the only Image comic of that initial bunch to survive was Spawn. That's the only one that actually, you think of like Youngblood. I mean, Savage Dragon is a porno comic now. Youngblood, Savage Dragon, Spawn, the only ones. Wildcats or whatever. All of them petered out by the late 90s. Spawn is the only one to survive because Todd is at least has a good business sense. Like, Todd knew how to market Spawn. But you got to remember, a lot of these comics did gangbusters. They're still some of the best-selling comics of all time. Mm-hmm. But they have no cultural impact nowadays.
Are you saying what Spawn. Captain Marvel number 7 is what worse than Spawn?
I don't know where you're going with that, but what I'm trying to say is, you had like basically in the comics boom, you had like 6 different covers, you know, like because they're trying to hit like those sales targets, and people just got burnt out of it.
Yeah,
and then you had the Calva crash in the mid 90s. I mean, there's several other factors, but I'm saying like the overemphasis on art was a huge contributing factor. That's my opinion.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until like the late 90s, early 2000s, when you started to see a shift more towards writing focus, you know, is really also the comic movies of the 2000s is those two things really kind of saved comics. Mm-hmm.
I think another big problem is enough people don't actually go outside and enough to consume. Like, what is someone picking off the shelf for? What would someone's idea for a comic to read for that month? You know, the reason why I'm saying people to go outside a bit more to the local comic scene, if they have one, I don't really have one out here, is because you could understand what are people actually buying, what are they interested in the stories at the moment, what are the kind of things that they naturally would want from a story.
Like, I'm going to tell you, so I do a lot of Comic Cons. Let me tell you the people who usually go. You either have the really young, as in like teenagers or young kids with their parents, or the very old, like the 20s and 30s somethings are on the whole not really going to cons. It's either the old heads, who, you know, those people are great, or or the younger teenagers, and the teenagers are more interested in like the anime manga, or you have like the under 10s with their parents. Those are people are great. That's cons. Like the 20s and 30s people, I don't really see much of them. Like I see some of them people, but it's mostly under 20 and like 40 and up is really most of the people I see at cons. Now this is a very rough kind of thing. I can't really give you like breakdowns, but that's just mostly what I see.
Because I think a lot of people are just generally in the indie comic scene. This one on Twitter that I see is just a little bit out of touch with like what the average person wants. The average person is looking for this.
To be fair, mainstream comics have the same problem. So
they've actually had the problem for many years, actually.
And it's kind of a funny thing to talk about, where it's like so much of the indie comic, especially our corner of the woods, is so based around calling out mainstream comics for being out of touch.
Yeah.
Yet we are guilty of the very same problem. Oh, that's going to get me in trouble. Bring it on.
No, it's a thing, too, where, you know, in mainstream comics, there's plenty of titles that come out weekly, guys. I know people randomly think it's just only so... No, guys, there's comics that literally come out weekly. I can tell you that very much. And there's titles that come out that you have no idea why they're even here. Who in their world, in their right mind, is interested in Captain Marvel number 7?
I mean, I will say that's one thing where I don't fault indie comics for is... Indie comics don't have the funds to put out a book every month. Like your average indie, they're lucky they can put out a book a year. I'm lucky I can put out two books a year. I'm like, oh my god, I'm breaking I'm doing more than average. I'm putting out two books a year. You know. But even me, my two books a year pales in comparison. Marvel puts out like what? 12 books a month? You know, DC, something similar.
Yeah.
So I'm not gonna fault indie for that. Okay. It is what it is. And yes. Indie books sometimes cost more because we're more of a kitsch kind of thing. Again, I don't fault indies for that, but
yeah,
at the same time, it is an advantage that Marvel and DC have. They can put out more stuff, usually at a lower price.
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing a lot of people don't understand, too, with the indie side is you do everything, well, in theory, it's what any person would do. They're doing mostly everything on their own, hiring people, getting, like, maybe potentially contracts written up for how people are getting paid and all that stuff. Well, Marvel has that all taken care of. Do people actually think it's just one person at Marvel doing it? If you think that, you need to actually just use your brain better. Do you guys think one person is doing all that stuff for comics? Logistics, art, writing, interiors, lettering? No.
Yeah, like even if you do...
Massive structure of people doing it.
But yeah, even if you... Like, see, I'm a writer, okay? I write the scripts, and then I hire out the rest of the stuff. But here's the other thing. I work with someone for logistics, but I'm creating on the marketer, on the PR, on the promo. The person making the comic, even if they don't do other things in the comic, they're still wearing a lot of hats if I worked at Marvel, I could just write scripts and it'd be whatever.
Right.
You know, I wouldn't even have to worry about like, oh, I have to go on streams, I have to create Indiegogos, like all this other stuff that you have to do. If I worked at Marvel or DC, I wouldn't have to worry about it. I could just write scripts.
And that's the other thing that I think there's so many sides to it. Like I think Dave Brink had a tweet a few days ago that went pretty hard. He was like, well, I don't really fit in a comic book shop because of like tribalism and all that stuff. And it's like, I mean,
that's kind of, I'm going to call BS on that.
That was a weird tweet because this is all for people that didn't feel like they fit into the other stuff, you know?
Well, Dave Brink's wrong in that regard because, I've seen his stuff. It's I guess comic books are about they look like they fit in with a normal comic book shop, you know. Like if you're talking politics, like yes, there is a bunch of leftism in the stuff, but honestly, your average comic shop, even the comic book shop owner, unless you're doing like an ultra like right political kind of comic, most of them won't even care, to be honest, you know. Like Perfect 10, like honestly, Perfect 10 would fit perfectly on a shelf next to the rest of the stuff, you know? And I mean that as a compliment. So I don't know where he's getting from that.
Oh, I found it, Because I'll just go over the tweet itself. That way, I'm pretty sure you've seen it. It got a decent amount
of views. No, I haven't. I'm not the biggest fan.
Making comics is my favorite thing ever. That's great. I love reading these things. I love
this.
But though, by the way, I don't really feel that I belong in the comic book scene. often it seems to be defined by tribalism, antagonism, and negativity instead of connecting creators and fans through art and stories. Or maybe it's because I'm a loner.
Well, here's the dirty little secret. There's tribalism wherever you go. You know what you do? You find your own tribe. You find your own group of people.
Or you make your own.
Like, I'm lucky. I found a group of people. I found a circle of people that I like, you know, that I mesh well with. And I keep to them and I go to those people. Like, there's tribalism wherever you go. So just whining about it, crying about it. Like, yeah, there's negativity. You know what you do? Like, you just don't listen to it. So the people who cry about the negativity, and I've probably done it a bit myself, to be honest. I'm calling myself out here. Like, yeah, it happens. But you know what you do? You bring more positivity in the world. You know, you try not to be negative on your platform. I want to make people smile, you know?
Yeah.
Like, Massey Swag, you're a really nice guy, and I appreciate you.
Well, I like being nice only if Ro could smash her boobs into my face, and I could motorboat her. But then I would die. That sounds good.
I mean, Ro can sit on me if she wants.
Yeah, you are going to die if she does that.
It will be a good death.
Well, because... Okay, so I don't disagree on those points that he brought up where it's defined by that. The problem here is, like, I tell people, when you go outside and you can see certain things happening in front of you, all that stuff is, like, afterthoughts. That's only based off the internet. Yeah.
Yeah, like you go to a convention, okay? Go to a comic convention. Ask 10 people, have you ever heard of this thing called Comicsgate? Nine out of 10 people will say, what's that? You know, maybe seven, maybe like three out of 10 will be able to tell you.
Okay? You're being generous there. That's pretty generous.
Your average, like the creators, it might be more four out of 10, maybe five out of 10. Right. But like your average comic book fan has no idea what Comicsgate is. They have no idea what the heck Iron Age is. Like your average comic book fan, like, oh, even Scabber, the guy that did the Green Lantern stuff 10 years ago. Oh, yeah, it was cool. You know, I guess, whatever. Most of these people have no idea what's going on. Like, we are so wrapped up in our own little world, we've forgotten what it looks like outside.
Yeah.
Holy crap, that's a sound clip right there. That is a sound clip.
Yeah, I think more people have forgotten what this actually means, and they keep just saying stuff. Like, just without any... Yeah, I'm saying it has meaning to it. And I do understand...
The virtue signaling. Like, what Chris... Yeah. What Dave is doing is a form of virtue signaling. Like, I'm going to say it right now. He's virtue signaling.
And I'm not even saying he's wrong with what he's saying, but it's in such weird spots. Like, if what you're describing is being defined as tribalism, then, well, you either make your own tribe, or you just do your own thing. That's how that works. Or...
Like, okay, you're a loner. You're a loner. Cool. Like, yeah.
People said there's negativity. Guys, there's quite literally negativity in every fandom community ever in existence.
There's no problem with being a loner, but the problem is when you're crying about being a loner, people think you're pathetic. I'm sorry. I'm just done. You got me unleashed today. You got me off the chain.
No, it's just weird. It's just interesting conversations. You know, it's just, I'm not saying one person is right or wrong. It's just, you know, I think people's perspectives are all just warped and destroyed by all this going on, you know?
Yeah.
Too much online. I guarantee you, there was like one of those Tim Pool podcasts where all these guys were like in a row with mics to their face. They wouldn't act this way anymore after that because you'd be like,
I don't know. Like, have you seen some of those podcast clips? Like, I kind of like doom scroll and like YouTube shorts sometimes. Like the whatever podcast, you know, like the girl versus guys ones. Those girls get pretty nasty.
Those girls are pretty hot. I'm not gonna lie, if you did stuff to their OnlyFans, I probably couldn't blame you. Those girls are really attractive, actually. Just saying.
I'm sorry, but I do not sub to OnlyFans.
Me neither. I would never do that. Women are disgusting and gross.
I'll pirate their OnlyFans, but you know.
Because I think if that style of whatever podcast happened with, like, I say, indie creators, where it's not online, it's just IRL, a mic to your face to someone else, I think people's perspectives change after that because you go like, it's really not as bad as I'm thinking. Maybe I am just stressing out, you know?
I mean, it's the old adage. It's like, take your worst enemy and go out and have a beer with them. By the end of the night, you'll find out you're not as different as you think that you are.
So are you telling me I should ask out Heather Antos?
Sure.
Honestly, I don't think she's that. She's ugly. I'm like, oh, she's not ugly. You know what's ugly is people? Lizzo. Lizzo is literally not attractive.
She's a, like, honestly, Heather is a solid 7.5 out of 10. The problem for me is her online persona. She kind of has like that Regina George mean girl kind of thing. I've talked to people who have met her in real life, and apparently she's very charming in real life. Like, she's got like a nice kind of cute, bubbly personality. Mm-hmm. So, like, I think that's why she's gone as far in the industry as she has, is she's very likable in person. Like, that's my theory.
Oh, I mean, you were talking about indie comics and not being able to produce. Well, as you guys know, May 4th is coming up, and it falls on Free Comic Book Day this year. Mm-hmm. And as you guys know, May 4th is obviously the anniversary of Star Wars. I know indie comics can't do this, but you got indie comics. I know they struggle. They participating in Free Comic Book Day would be great for a lot of them, actually. But they can't,
because you're not. I am. Okay. Like I said, the Friday before Free Comic Day, so May 3rd, I'm going to be at a comic shop doing a signing, and I'm going to leave some of my comics for Free Comic Day.
Just give them all to the black kids.
I'll call them reparations.
That's how it works, actually, you know? Lord. So, what's another interesting thing based around comics that I think a lot of people don't bring up is how quickly someone's interest dies out in something. Like, guys, here's the factor, and there's so many coming out that yours basically has to not only keep the person's interest, but since you're an indie comic creator, it's going to take a bit of time to get to the next issue. Like, got to understand, people move on from stuff very, very fast, you know?
Yeah, that's a problem with indie creators. We're like, I put out a floppy every year, twice a year, okay? And let's be honest, a lot of my people are Screecher fans. I do have Torrid Samurai, but Screecher is kind of my main product. So, like, there's a year between these issues. It's even worse for the people who they put out a trade every 2 to 3 years, you know, where you do a trade, like you do a campaign and you back it. 2 to 3 years later, you get your book. I've said this multiple times. The worst reaction you can get is when the book comes in the mail, they open it and they say, oh, I forgot I ordered this. That is the worst thing that can happen.
Yeah. I have stuff that I've not just forgotten I've ordered, but because there's so much stuff. Like, not only do I have to consume the characters that I already enjoy and love, not consume all the other indie stuff. It's not about money. It's like, sometimes I don't think it's about money. It's just, basically, you have all this stuff to buy, and it's like, how am I going to get to everything? That's the problem, actually. Yeah. You know? Because the pure factor, if money was that bad, use your brains, people. If money was that bad for people, campaigns would be doing nothing. Campaigns quite literally would probably peak out at like $800 maybe, if we're being really honest there. People have money. It's just, you know, a lot of it is strapped already, not just in bills, because bills cost a lot, and inflation's a bitch. And there's so many people, like, if you're already buying monthly titles from your local comic book shop, it's like, now I gotta extend like five other indies on, and it's like, well, fuck me.
Well, here's the other thing, mm-hmm. is... people don't so much back the book as they do the creator, okay?
Yeah,
that is a fact we only realize. Mm-hmm. So when they back the book, they're not necessarily buying Screecher. They're supporting Nick Phoenix, the comic book creator. And I thank everybody who thinks I'm cool enough to buy the book from. The people who want to spend the hard-earned money on my books, thank you. God bless you. Mm-hmm. I really appreciate you. But, like, you know, this is kind of where the YouTube and the Twitter stuff goes out. You put yourself out there as a personality. Hopefully people like your personality and they want to support you.
Because that's the other thing that I've seen happen in the comic book scene. It's like, whenever I would read a story or watch a video about a comic book, anything, like a guy, I would go on Twitter, see if they have a Twitter profile. Profile could either be, pretty much if you work for the mainstream, your profile blows up. Kind of like if you're like an LCS, League of Legends pro. There's the difference between being an amateur versus being in the pro scene. If you, once you hit the pro scene, your followers probably explode from like maybe 1,000 to like 50K. It's actually insane. Mm-hmm. Have you seen the numbers that Daniel Warren Johnson has on his Twitter account now? It's ridiculous, actually. Mm-hmm. You know? So you're right. If you put out some pretty good stuff and your writing really works, people legitimately will find you and they will just follow you. With the indie comic scene, you mentioned, if I know you face to face, I can back your book then. You know, there's two different barriers to it, but it both can be very, very applicable. Now, Could do you see where people are coming from? Where it's like, if you never knew who Daniel Warren Johnson was, you just bought Transformers, you just liked it. You know, I can understand why people don't want to know who their creators are. You know, he could be a fucking, I'm not saying he is, he could be a fucking raging weirdo. He could be a fucking crackhead. I don't know. You know, I think the personal relationships and the non-personal ones have their benefits too. You know, because I think what the personal ones that you get from any creator.
Most people who buy Daniel's Transformers book are not buying it for Daniel. They're buying it because of Transformers.
Pretty much, yeah. He's just happened to be a beneficiary person, a part of it right now.
No. The way that people end up liking certain writers or artists is it happens over time, okay? Mm-hmm. You know, like you read, like let's say you read 15 books by Chuck Dixon and be like, hey, I like the way Chuck Dixon writes books. Mm-hmm. I'm a fan of Chuck Dixon now, you know, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You know, or you read a lot of these people's stuff. Eventually, you like the writing style, you like the art. I'm a fan of this person now. So what I'm saying is, it's a gradual process. It's not like, what put one issue out, all of a sudden you have fans.
Oh, for sure. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Fandom is built over time.
And I think the only downside that really has it to the personal relationship is that turns into like, whenever the book does come out and the person ever eventually gets that book, well, it's like, let's say that person didn't like it. Well, since they know you kind of personally because they put that much faith to you and bought your book, now they're hesitant on reviewing it. So it won't hurt your feelings. That's the problem. Because with these people, the reason
The other flip side is these people who are so invested in you personally, and then they get the book and they don't like it, all of a sudden you have an angry mob at your door.
Yeah, that's a problem too. Is the reason why a lot of people can say these things about the mainstream comic pros, or like they like or dislike them, you don't know them personally. There is no connecting.
There's a
like
wall of separation.
Yeah. Which is called the comic book shop or eBay or wherever you buy your books, actually. With the indie scene, like you said before, it's more of a personal thing. That's why you don't get a lot of reviews of indie books, is because, well, if I hate Nick's book, well, I sure can't tell him that. God damn, he might actually hate me.
It's also bad. And also, let's be honest, we're both YouTube creators.
I am.
We both know. We're both content creators, okay?
Hello?
Hi. Hello there.
Well, yeah, it just...
So yeah, we're both content creators, okay? Mm-hmm. And we both know that when you review an indie book, you're expecting to have your views in the toilet, you know? It's a fact of life. Like, when you review an indie book, you don't get many views off of it. Review Batman, you get your eyes on it. You know, I've seen indie reviews I do, like their views in the tank, indie creator reviews. You know, you do those reviews mostly as a charity, hey, I like this guy, I'm going to review their book, get some more eyes on it. I'm not expecting many views from it. I'll take the algorithm hit because I want to support the scene. That's at least my perspective. But the fact
that's what I was going to do too. And yeah, I told people the reason why you do the review is because it's more beneficial to the actual creator itself that you gave them their thoughts. So that way they can improve. They might get mad. They might. Who cares? You putting out a review, whether it be on Twitter, whether it be on Instagram, wherever you do content, wherever you put out your thoughts at, means so much more than you not saying anything. Not saying anything directly implies to people you thought it was bad. Saying it right now. That's what it means. Mm-hmm. Even if you don't actually think it's bad, you know? Just every little bit of promotion helps because, you know, mainstream books like Marvel, DC, Image, Dark Horse, IDW, if you guys seen those Twitter accounts, they have a lot of followers on there. And
so...
Need a lot of eyes on those books. The marketing itself is mostly done by that. You know, you don't have that.
Speaking of promotion, I got a comic book that's coming out soon.
Really?
Yeah.
Is it called Black Man Needs Reparations #1?
That's your book.
Huh. Wait a minute. You're right. Wait, I don't support black people. The hell? I buy Black Panther. I bought Ultimate Black Panther #1. I did. So I'm not racist. That's how it works. You know?
Yes, you have virtue signaled, my friend.
I'll get to it eventually. There's a pile of stuff here, actually.
Yeah, have you read Torn Samurai yet?
No. The only book I bought from you was Screecher. I know you gave me something else. I can't remember what it was. I think you gave me #1 of that. I think you did.
I might have given you #1 of Project X as like my first book or whatever.
Okay. This is a black guy.
Well, Asian, but yes.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah, so click on the pre-launch page. There's a trailer we can watch.
I thought you didn't like Iron Age. I thought you were part of Comicsgate.
Dude. That is mean.
Comics gay, as you like to put it, actually.
Well, they do love their gay ops, so.
God. 2100 Samurai number 4, follow a friend. You can sign up right now. I have a lot of listeners on my podcast. As we say, for any of the indie creators, go and check them out, whether it be on Twitter, give them a follow, or subscribe to their YouTube channels, wherever you can. Always helpful, you know? And if you can't afford the book, doesn't matter. Promote it, share it, do all that stuff. It greatly helps out.
Ever-loving shit out of this.
All right, so what's this one about, man?
All right, so this is, I'm kind of like knee-deep in the second storyline of Turn Samurai. It's a three-parter called The Vow. This is like the Empire Strikes Back of the trilogy. It's really, you know, it's kind of where things like balls-to-the-wall action, and basically it's like, so Kiro has been training his friend Tyler in like the ways of the samurai. She's a little bit too eager, some stuff happens, so now he needs to go into the belly of the beast to rescue her from the kidnapping, and she may not come out the same.
Hi. View of the interiors, not cover page yet, through the page right here. You have the same similar artist. I noticed that with a lot of your books, too.
Yeah, I use the same artist, Brian Q. He does.
Yeah. It makes sense because, you know, keeps it all consistent art. They would be like, oh, well, you know, this one looks better than this one. It's like, well, if everything's consistent, then it's fine. You know?
Yeah, plus like the art's consistent, but Brian has been really improving his style. Look, we found our stride with issue 3 Turn Samurai, but I gotta tell you, like, I actually just got his finished like shading and colors for pages 1 through 4 today. Mm-hmm. And oh dear god, they look amazing. Like issue 3 looks great, but if you compare issue 3 to issue 4, you can tell there's an upgrade in the art.
Mm-hmm. And you have your own universe. There's this universe, 2100 Samurai. There's Screecher, yes. And then there's Project Access, and he's calling it, guys, the inverse.
Yes, I am very self-centered.
Why?
Because I want to. N is for the record. Yes, it is based off of the first letter of my name, but also it's like the inverse. You know, like inverse kind of thing. It's just a nice little play off of words.
Should have called it the Phoenix Verse. I don't know why you didn't do that. It'd be more on brand.
The N verse kind of rolls off.
I hate you. God,
how dare I properly market my stuff?
Because what are the okay? So now, since you've had all these titles come out, what is advice you would say to someone that's just starting out? You know, because everyone always asks, like, well, what do I do if I want to get into this or if I want to just start out?
Do what you can, do what you can afford, okay? Mm-hmm. There's no shame in putting out a black and white book. If you can't afford a colorist, do black and white.
That's true, yeah.
I mean, heck, if you can only afford to do an 8 or 12-page story just to kind of, like, get started and get your name out there, then do it. Heck, a 4-page story. If all you can do is have an artist do 4 pages of black and white, then do it. It's better to do something than nothing at all.
Mm-hmm.
And that 4 pages can be like really crappy art. I mean, heck, I know a guy in my local scene. We call him Comics for a Dollar Guy, where he has like 6-figure comics, and he just like Comics for a Dollar, Comics for a Dollar. That guy makes bank.
Mm-hmm. And what's the thing? Let's do it. You also had a trade paperback that came out a while ago too, right?
Mm-hmm. One moment. We'll be
trade paperback this. Covers. I think I had it on here. I think you
did. Issues 1 and 2. It's currently available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Walmart, and MSK's mom's house.
Well, probably going up inside my dad's ass later on, too.
Well, it is pretty foldable, as you're about to see, so I wouldn't doubt that.
That's crazy. You actually got yours into a Barnes & Noble's. That's crazy. Critical
well,
Blast
just
did a great job.
So this is the trade. This is my personal copy. You know, here. Yeah. And it covers the first 2 issues, and it has, like, a little bonus material in the back and whatnot, you know.
Okay. That's good.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's currently like you literally go into your local Barnes & Noble and say, I want this book, and they can order it for you.
It's great. That is awesome, man. Yeah. Because I think people got to understand the reason why you want yourself in comic shops is just how many eyes would come on and notice it if it's there. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, there's another thing I want to talk about, too. More of spicy stuff. Real hot, spicy stuff. Someone's going to burn your tongue. I can't even eat the spicy McNuggets at McDonald's. They burn my mouth too much. So we had a stream where I was on. We were talking about, like, Eric and Ethan and all those guys and stuff like that. Mm. You know?
How you really wanted now? That engagement, didn't you?
I do. That's just how it is, man. You know?
I mean, I've succumbed to the same... I've succumbed to the same demons. I'm as much of a clout goblin as you. I'm literally going to be doing that this week.
I'm Black Joe Rogan. That's what I go by now.
pull up the video on the dinosaurs boxing. Hey, Jamie, pull up the videos on the boxing dinosaurs.
I will pull up hot girl WWE wrestling. That stuff is just wow, but I love it. Ugh, good Lord. Maybe I should get into doing red wrestling and watching it. It just looks so stupid. Like, and I never was into it when I was younger, so I thought I just was not interested, didn't care for it. But the random stuff that I was shown, it looks so retarded. It reminds me of that South Park episode where they're like, let's just make up some shit and go with it.
Apparently, like, after Vince has been sacked, apparently the show has been kind of getting better. Like, some fans are being like, oh, it's getting better. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. Wrestling might be making a comeback here soon. I don't know.
Hmm. So, my thing with the stuff we were talking about on your show is, I think people, Ethan has some crazy things he said, but it's one thing I'll bring up here, which is, people are so wrapped up in just how these two do things, they don't even know what they're doing themselves anymore. Yeah, you noticed that?
I see a lot of people, mm-hmm. and you get this, like, really anywhere. It's like, mm-hmm. This is kind of what, like, ticks me off, is these people treat, like, Ethan, Eric, like gods. And if they say something, it is law. Like Eric says mm-hmm. this, Ethan says that, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like they can't think for themselves. Or if you think differently, it's like, oh, no, you're wrong because my chosen deity says otherwise.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going for the juggler today.
It's just some of those things that get brought up with some of these guys. It's like, people know that they're not the end-all, be-all with indie comics because there's there's no big person theoretically here that controls everything. It's like everyone does their own thing. Everyone
these people are successful. And thus, with them being successful, there is wisdom to be gained. Because if they are successful, you know, odds are they're doing something right. So looking at what they do is actually a good idea. But mm-hmm. what the problem is, people take what they like what they did, treat that as gospel. What works for Eric doesn't work for Ethan. And what works for both of them might not necessarily work for you. See, that's mm-hmm. the problem is these people, they take tips, they take advice. But you need to filter it through your brain, filter it through your own realities. I'll be like, mm-hmm. Eric has an entire warehouse. He has an entire logistics chain where he can do stuff. Mm-hmm. That's why he can do what he can do. Ethan is a former DC artist. Ethan had a name before mm-hmm. Before he even came into the scene. You don't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the big problem, too, is, like, Ethan is still technically, you could say, coasting off of his time working with the big two.
He totally is.
Yeah. And but that goodwill for working with them a long time ago is still good enough for people. Like, he worked for DC. That must mean he has prestige value. And it's like, it's like one of those things where a good movie comes out a long time ago and in a franchise. People are like, oh, but Spider-Man 2 came out. And it was, guys, Spider-Man 2, I love that movie. It's one of my favorite super movies ever made. But back to rain. We can't just only look at how good
Hollywood. That's literally the only thing keeping Hollywood going nowadays is the member berries.
Yeah, that's all it really is, you know. And Eric coming out doing his own thing is great, but he had a lot of money that he saved up. A lot of people aren't going to have that
specific opportunity. Not only does money saved up, he has other entities backing him. Like he's being funded. You know, the conspiracy theory is being funded by the Blades. I don't really have any proof for that, but that's just what I hear. So.
Oh, yeah. It's, I'll be right back. His YouTube channel is huge. Mm-hmm. I want people to understand, if you hit around 100,000 subs, do you know how much, that probably puts you in the top, like, 1 percentile of YouTube. Do you know how much audience traction you get from that? A lot, actually. You know, just, yeah. So, yeah, that thing like you mentioned before. It's like two sides of the same coins. There are things that work for both. There's something that don't. What I don't think works for, you know, Ethan is going out on Twitter and saying all this, that stuff that he goes off. Because I think that actually turns people off more than it actually helps, honestly.
Like Ethan has made a good... He probably makes bank on his YouTube with the drama farming, okay? Let's be honest.
Drama farm? How do you farm? I want to get a shovel. I want to get a rake.
You get a shovel, and then you whack someone over the head with it. That's how you drama farm.
That's how you end up in a Halloween movie, actually. And I think we were talking on your stream the last time I was on there, and you know, I think Nerd Rhett brought up the thing about a product. It's like, why are we hung up on, I like Nerd Rhett's not that bad. She's a fine person. It's just like, why are we getting hung up about the semantics of what we call a comic book? It's like, I don't understand that. That's really stupid. Like, who cares?
Yeah, plus the other thing is, I think we're so hung up on the word woke. Like, it's been, I think that word has been so used so often that it's a bit played out.
I think like, people just substitute it now for the word bad. You know, people don't say the word bad anymore. They just use the word woke. Woke just means bad,
which
at this point,
which I think is a bit of a misnomer because, what people classify as woke, I think people are too happy with that trigger. Mm-hmm. Like people have called Screecher woke. Like I had one person call Screecher woke and I'm like,
The headline is a girl character. Like, what? That couldn't be woke. Okay, for anyone that's woke, would be like if you started Screech out as a dude and it be like turned into a girl, they'd be like, okay, that'd be understandable. But that's not
okay.
How
okay,
works.
Let me kind of spell it out for you. Okay, mm-hmm. A or B cup is woke. Anything bigger than a C cup is porn adult coomer.
Hmm.
I don't make the rules.
Oh, gosh. And the other thing that I've seen pop up with people when they discuss certain things is like just getting in the weeds and trenches and stuff that just doesn't matter. You know?
Yeah. And the other thing is
so weird.
The thing I'm just tired about is it's like you get into a debate with someone. This happens all the time on Twitter where
I love Twitter.
It just devolves into rhetoric and personal attacks. And even when you call them out on it, they're just like I fell into this trap. There's a troll. Like I fed the troll. I made the car. Like that is a prime directive online. Never feed the trolls. I made the mistake. I fed a troll. I gave him a 9-course feed.
Why do you do that? Good Lord.
I'm an idiot. Apparently, I'm an idiot. Okay.
Oh, the other thing that I've mentioned that I should have mentioned on your show and I was thinking about it a few days ago, which was people constantly shit on from that side. They constantly shit on Eric, Geeks and Gamers, FNT and all that stuff. Then have the ball and nerve to like be like, wow, these guys promote me. And someone in my thread was like, I know I kind of blew up a little bit. You know, once in a while, I got a zinger there that'll blow up a little bit. They were like, who's they? If you're that blind, I'm not going to spell it out for you. Like, you can't be that oblivious. You know what I'm talking about. It's not always about naming a specific person. I see it. I'm not, like, retarded. You can see it. If I'm shitting on – example for anyone. If I'm shitting on you specifically 24-7, 365 days a year, 7 days a week, why in the world – let's say you had, like – let's say your platform had, like, 10,000 subs. Why in the world would you promote me? Why
basically it's that one meme where like the guy shoots and looks at the camera and he's like, why won't blah blah blah. It's By the way, you need to make that meme, or either you or I will.
Oh god, it's like the girl who's throwing the shit back, the thing, and they throw it back to her. I just don't get it. It's like people want all this promotion and it's like you've been talking shit about that person every day. It's like, if I was that bigger person, I'm not giving you promotion. And this thing that you meant, and that people, this thing that they do not mention, which is when someone's a bigger content creator, giving all that random promotion is not exactly potentially a good thing for that audience specifically because they might be interested in that, you know? So there's a lot more things to this, guys, than just promotion, you know? That's all you want. Isn't that technically just clout chasing?
It literally is.
Yeah, that's really all that kind of boils down to is people just want a clout chase because they're not willing to put in the long hours of work. That's just really all it is, you know? You got to put in some of the long hours to get this where it needs to go. But I did want to ask you about what movies are you going to be watching? I know you're going to watch Rebel Moon Part 2. I know you liked the first one.
Yeah, we're doing that for Jared's channel, so it's Jared. Pretty much required.
Jared. Good Lord. Good Jared. Old baby Jared. Oh, gosh. Well, the other movies you're going to watch, did you see Godzilla vs. Kong 2?
No, I wasn't really a fan of Godzilla vs. Kong 1. I see, when it comes to the MonsterVerse, everyone shits on King of the Monsters, but that's actually my favorite one. And I thought Godzilla vs. Kong was okay. But like, I didn't really see anything with like the new Godzilla movie that really caught my fancy. So I just didn't really go see it. I'm not saying it's a bad movie. I'm not saying it sucks. I'm just saying it just didn't really interest me. So, yeah.
Because I think the next movie you said you're going to be seeing is Deadpool 3, right?
Yeah, I'm excited for that one. I saw Dune 2. I was actually really excited for Ghostbusters, but then all that stuff came out, and I'm like, I'm not in.
I know they released a second trailer. I know they released the first trailer for the Joker, the second Joker movie, actually.
I still haven't even seen the first one.
Really? That's crazy. I think the first one's actually pretty good.
Yeah. I think I've seen parts of it. It looked okay. I don't know. It's a ripoff of Taxi Driver. That's literally all it is. So.
Oh gosh, I think that specific universe should have been paired with a Matt Reeves Batman universe. That would have made it a lot more interesting.
Honestly. All right, check your Twitter DMs.
Yeah. One sec. Good Lord, because there's so much stuff coming out. Like Invincible, I know is. Struggling to get the episodes done. Oh gosh, jeez. I'll use that when the time is right, and that'll be perfect.
Well, I'm about to tweet it. So
no. Good Lord.
Are you asking me not to tweet this?
Because no, you're fine. Go ahead, man. Yeah, go ahead. I was just fucking with you. And the other thing that's coming out next year, Superman Legacy. I mean, there's Fantastic Four that's coming out. I'm pretty sure you saw the Silver Surfer casting. That was just so bad. That was just shit.
Silver Surfer is a niche character to begin with. But the people who do know him as Norrin Rad. Yeah. So you have one character who showed up in four issues, then died, versus a character who is literally older than us, who showed up in the late 60s. Who has like 50 years worth of stories behind him. And they're going with the girl. Like, why do you want to go with the girl Silver Surfer? Why do you need to? Like, I can understand sometimes you race Ben or you gender swap because of whatever. Like the black Gordon in the Batman. Mm-hmm. Great actor. He was perfect for Gordon. Okay. Michael Clark Duncan as the Kingpin. Perfect casting. I don't care about the skin color. He was a Kingpin. You know, those are fine. And, like, I can understand gender bending. Like, but, like, so, like, I know sometimes, like, oh, it's a story I want to tell. But, like, what is there a story you want to tell with a female Silver Surfer? Also, why is Silver Surfer even in this movie?
Yeah, because the thing here, the people need to understand when it comes to Fantastic Four is whenever you think of Silver Surfer, people only think of Norrin Rad. That's it. They in their brains, we know that a female Silver Surfer even exists. The other thing to bring up is, what is the point of having a female Silver Surfer when the mainstream of people that are going to watch this movie know that the male one exists? They're just going to be like, this is what's going to hurt the female one anyway. People would be like, where's the male one at?
Then I have to little bamboozle. Even that aside, you're kind of running into a problem where you're overstuffing the movie. Like, apparently Franklin Richards is going to be in this movie. Like, why?
Yeah, and
Fantastic Four. This is the first movie. Like, according to people, there have never been a good Fantastic Four. Like, I actually liked 2005. I think that's actually, I think they nailed
the nail. That's probably the best one. Yeah.
I actually legitimately like that movie. I'm a defender of 2005. I think they got it. Sequel,
I mean, if the fact that Rise of Silver Surfer might actually have a better Silver Surfer than the newest Fantastic Four coming out in 2025.
They got Lawrence Fishburne to voice Silver Surfer. It's kind of begun to hard to top that.
Probably. It's just one of those things where people are like, there's a female Silver Surfer in the comic books. Guys, virtually everything that you could probably think of probably already exists in comic books. That's the reason why this is called creative bankruptcy right now. Mm-hmm. You know? There was a Batman run. Batman made Robin eat rats. That happened in comic books. You want to see that in the Batman movie? Probably not, because that's fucking stupid, and that's a bad idea.
There's literally comic books where Batman is in a giant rat trap and is about to get hit with a giant fly swatter.
Yeah, all those campy 70s, 80s comics. You guys want all those ideas on screen? That's the point. It's like the fact that basically 99%.
Do you want Spider-Man to give Mary Jane cancer because of his radioactive cum? Do you want that story?
It was in the comics, man. It's fair game, right? No, people. It's comics can have stupid things, and this is the thing. Do you understand? The fact that a lot of you guys had to basically look up who that was goes to show you she's not even... You don't even care she existed. Nobody knew that character existed until that day. I'm calling that right now. The only people that knew were like the 5% of comic fans out there that even consumed that
story. I actually would like to see the comic Vine statistics for like the hits on that particular page. The day it got announced. It's like, I imagine it's like...
Yeah, yeah. Because that's the thing is... Same thing with movies, guys, when it comes to comics. Because I read a lot of them. Think about like movies. Word of mouth. Who wrote it? Who did it? Art, all that stuff. The fact that no one can tell you who the artist was, who wrote the book, how long the issues were running. But it came out in 2012. Oh, 2012, when Marvel did all new Marvel, and they basically were like, you know what? Let's put all the stuff back. That people actually
It's like you can tell that even they, like when they did Thor, Love and Thunder, even they knew. Like the fact that like the story was baked with it being a one and done with Jane Foster.
Yeah.
They knew this was like, it's not replacing Thor, but it was just kind of like a one and done.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's one of those things where like, my audience were like, hey, Miss K, give it a few days. They might announce the male one. Guys, I knew they weren't, but I gave it a few days. Gave it a week, actually. No, there's no male one. They're just stupid. They're just dumb people. And I know a lot of people had this other argument, dude, which was like, but it's only in a movie, dude. Maybe take it a little too far. This is the problem. That's the problem there. People don't care enough. The only version of that character that people know is Norrin Rat. That's it. The fact that they're even...
And even then, he's a niche character.
Yeah. It's one of those things where maybe people are a little overreacting, but I wouldn't even call overreacting. This is just a stupid idea for no reason other than we just want to have brownie points with random weirdos that might not even watch the movie.
Remember, would call Silver Surfer a C or B list character at best.
Because the other thing to mention here, if people don't know who that character is, and they go to see him for the first time, this might be someone's first interpretation of this character, they're going to get some shit, terrible, wrong interpretation of it. When they go find out it's a male, they're going to be like, the fuck was that? What did I get there? So many problems.
Oh, I'm sure Marvel is going to launch like a new comic with this character on it.
Oh, they did. Yeah, they will. Yeah, it happens all the time. Oh, God.
Oh, did you hear that apparently it's come out that that like killing Kamala was actually done on the orders of Kevin Feige?
Oh, that is a rumor. I heard that.
It's actually come out an artist or writer who worked on the comic has confirmed Kevin Feige ordered it to happen because Kamala was an inhuman. So they wanted to kill her off and make her more in line with the movie.
Oh my good lord.
Let's be honest, we all called that. Like I'm not even saying I'm special for calling it. We all called that. We all knew what was happening. Every one of us called that.
Oh, I'm just, Ms. Marvel's another one of those characters where it's like, why do they keep trying to make her a thing? No one likes this character. The only part of her that's liked is Iman Vellani playing her. The actress who portrays her and make-believe is more interesting than Ms. Marvel herself.
Like, I'm going to be honest with you, I was trying to give the movie the benefit of the doubt. Because, like, okay, they got in the 60s. I called that years ago. Mm-hmm. That cool. Pedro Pascal as Reed Richards, on like all things notwithstanding, he's an okay pick. I'm just getting tired of Pedro Pascal being in everything, to be honest. Like, he's a decent enough actor. He could probably do Reed Richards okay. I'm just tired of him. And like John Krasinski, I think he actually did a good job in Multiverse of Madness. Mm-hmm. I think he could have been a good Reed Richards. I just wanted Emily Blunt and John Krasinski. Like, Emily Blunt would have been a great Sue Storm. Like, I was willing to give it a chance, but then the Silver Surfer stuff, and then, like, rumors of Franklin Richards being like, I'm gonna be honest, I'm probably not gonna go see the movie when it comes out in theaters. Like maybe when the trailer comes out and it's, like, amazing, and we're like, oh! I'm gonna go see it now! Like, I reserve the right to be wrong, but at this
point... I will say, I'm most likely still going to watch it. My thing is, this is potentially Fantastic Four's last chance of getting a movie, and we're going to put the wrong version of Silver Surfer in there. This is the last. Just be honest here. How many superhero characters get like 4 attempts at a movie? Not many. Outside like the really popular ones, you know?
I'm trying to think here.
Like only Batman, right. Spider-Man, Superman have had more than 4 movies attached to them, I think. Well, Avengers, well, that technically is a group, but, you know.
Fantastic Four 2005 was an okay success. Like, that movie was not a failure. That movie in itself was not a failure. The sequel was, and then the reboot most definitely was. Also, I feel like the Roger Corman one kind of doesn't count because that technically never got released.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Whenever I think Fantastic Four, I'm thinking of like the one you're talking about, the Fox ones into the MCU one now.
The first one did decent. Like, it didn't
it did
blow the box office. I mean, it made enough to make a sequel. Like, it, I think, you know, it did okay. Mm-hmm. And I think that movie is actually pretty good. Even Fantastic Four 2, like, it's not the worst movie ever, but it did kill things.
I hope people go and potentially see what this movie has to be about, because good Lord, I'm going to watch it, but the problem here is like, why? I just don't understand the idea of why make that decision. What's the point of that existing other than, hey, I'm just trying to fuck with people. I'm just trying to piss them off. Because there's no way that specific female version of the character will start selling comic books. Maybe that's their idea. Maybe I'm just fucking giving too much leeway. Everybody thinking like, oh, this will start selling a new line of female Silver Surfer comics. No, it won't, guys.
I mean, I wouldn't put it past companies. I think they maybe started to catch on to the fact that, like, when you do a certain story, it sells gangbusters. It's like, remember when James Gunn announced his slate, and then he said, like, oh, they're like, Supergirl is based off of Woman of Tomorrow or something. The book sold out on Amazon. So yeah. Zack Snyder had Final Crisis on a shelf, and it sold off just because it was on a shelf.
I remember that, yeah.
Snyder fans are the best, I'm just saying.
Good Lord, he just showed an image of a turkey. I remember that. It was the little turkey thing. Yeah. People thought, oh, release, I saw the turkey, a picture cut of a turkey.
Apparently, he grilled a mean burger, so.
Good Lord. Do you at least not
think I wouldn't that mind weird? Having a Snyder burger? Just saying.
No, did you not think that was weird back then where people saw a picture of a turkey and they thought the Snyderverse was restored? That had to have been peak. I was like, okay, I get you want this universe back. I get it. But that's just going a little too far. That's just craziness right there.
Yeah.
Oh, good Lord. Oh, a shark movie.
Coming. Oh, Taladia. Taladia's like, will you see old ways, Nick? Yes. Yes, we will.
Taladia, put your man.
We may use the old ways on one of our comrades. And I'm just going to leave it at that. MSK, I'm going to show you something after we're done here.
You're fine. And you know, Jared's like, you want to do comic books, man? I was like, yeah, man, let's do it. He's like, okay. I was like, well, what's your read? So we can kind of keep up. Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman. I was like, Jared, thank you for your nice fucking...
Jared, I love him, but he is way too invested in his chosen ship. Like, I love you, Jared, but Super Wonder is not the be-all end-all. You love Super Wonder, that's fine, but it's not like he, like,
yeah.
That guy is very passionate about his Super Wonder.
I told him, man, hey, there's great comics out there. Why the fuck are you just only buying Batman, Superman, fucking Wonder Woman? I get it. What recently? I haven't even dappled into that. With
Palladia is defending his friend, which I
respect. No Super Wonder. No Super Batman needs Wonder Woman. Batman needs Wonder Woman. He needs to be fucking pounding her. And well, he would die if he did that. But, you know.
Oh. Yeah.
Batman, Wonder Woman needs to be a thing. Just saying. Fuck Lois Lane. Not I like Lois Lane, actually.
Well, old Jared would actually agree on you that he hates Lois Lane with a passion.
Such a random thing. Out of all the characters to not like, it's Lois Lane. Holy crap.
I mean, man. Jared is a quirky little fellow, so I love
him. No, dude, hey man, I'm saying, dude, if Batman like does missionary style to run Wonder Woman, he dies. No. Like,
I mean, apparently Batman prefers to give rather than receive.
Oh, Lord, good Lord.
Gotta say, when that controversy came out,
yeah,
I was like, who cares? Okay, Batman is a generous lover. Who cares? Like, I think that people were so like like had this like image in their head, like Batman is a peak of masculinity. He doesn't go down on a woman. Women go down on him. It's like back and forth, you know, give in or see. Come on.
Oh, I know. You're talking about that picture where it's Batman blowing Catwoman.
Batman loves the pussycats.
Yes. His eyes were.
We're skirting it here. We're skirting.
No, I'm just saying his eyes were rolling back a little hard on that one. Just saying, bro. If a girl tastes that good,
we're talking about Batman and his poorly disguised fetish.
No, like, dude, if a girl tastes that good down there and your eyes rolling back, that might be a god, actually. Zod and Lois.
Oh yeah, that's the one he's been pushing that one.
Well, we're gonna wrap it up here in a little bit. A few last things I want to ask you, man. You got any plans coming up for yourself or YouTube and comic wise?
Well, tomorrow's gonna be a big stream for me. So tomorrow I'm gonna be doing a stream with myself, Jared, and Master of TDS. We are going to be going over the bot problem infesting Twitter, which TDS has been very diligent in doing. I mean, it's Master TDS, so that's going to be a big stream. He's a pretty cool guy. Let's see here. Friday, we got Friday Night Frenzy, where we'll be going over ego-ruining indie comics, which, you know, maybe you can come by if you want. You know,
maybe. I don't like you, actually.
Then Saturday, I'm definitely hopping on the algorithm, and I'm starting a playthrough of Fallout New Vegas, because I am just as much a Clout Goblin as anyone else.
And that's the thing is, you know, egos are the death of black men. Just fuck with you guys.
Pride before fall. That's the best I can say.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, good Lord. And Shagsworth had a tweet earlier today, and he was like, well, if you haven't actually played the game, how would you know it's a shit game? Well, that's the thing is, people aren't exactly shitting on the gameplay of the game. They're shitting on the trailers that they've seen. That's
this is another one of those things where I got to push back. It's just a rhetoric people use because... trailers are meant for advertising, okay? Trailers are meant to be like, if you see it like the trailer, you buy the game. If I see enough of the trailer where it's like, I don't look like the game, that game looks like crap. I don't care if like, oh, like, I don't believe in the, oh, you haven't seen the movie, so you're not allowed to have an opinion. Oh, you haven't played the game, you're not allowed opinion. Fuck that. Fuck you.
Yeah, that's the problem. Because I following probably like your similar opinion, which is like the trailers are for advertising marketing, and if the trailer didn't grab you or grab your attention, well, either maybe the second trailer might. If the second trailer or whatever subsequent later on TV spots or other shows don't grab you, it's probably not something you like. Same thing happened with the Suicide Squad game that came out. I was like that's what just looked really bad, and I was like, I'm not supporting that. You know, I'm not saying it's a terrible game. I'm just saying from what I saw, I was like, I'll keep my money. Actually.
Oh, but watch out.
That's great.
Yeah, Talati and Jared, they're super fans of the game, and I've clashed with them a couple of times because that game is like everything I don't like in video games. And then once the Batman scene came out, I was like, screw this.
Oh, good Lord, yeah.
You are goddamn right, sir. You are goddamn right.
Yeah, I love chasing clout, and I love sucking off women for clout. That's what I do.
Hey, as long as you don't go chasing waterfalls, we're all good.
Good Lord. That's how you die. Good Lord. What is Zack Snyder going to do next after Rebel Moon? Because Rebel Moon's over, technically, after this.
I think he's got, like, one of his Of Dead movies coming out.
Oh, a sequel to Army of the Dead? Oh, Lord. Please, no. No!
I watched the Vegas one. It wasn't bad.
Okay. Because moving on to the last thing I'll ask you, which is anything you want to say, any shout-outs you want to give to anyone before we head out, actually.
Shout out to my man Zevius, who's making an amazing cover for me. I'm actually going to be crowdfunding my novel, my first novel, here in August this year. Written, like prose, like actual. It's an actual book.
Okay.
And it's like a sci-fi fantasy novel called Lost Kingdom. That's going to be hit. And Zevius is working on the cover. He finished the back cover, and it looks amazing. Mm-hmm. He's working on the front, and oh my god. Oh, this is going to be a great cover, and I'm really excited.
That's awesome, man. Yeah. How many hours did you spend writing a day to get this even going?
Well, I wrote the first draft mainly during COVID. And I said, basically, I was writing every day during that time. When I do a chapter, I'd usually to like take a few days off to kind of like rest and go back to it. My writing goal each day when I was writing was like 500 to, like, I think I did 500 first, but then I upped it to 1,000 words a day. And I was doing that. And so basically I was kind of doing like a new chapter every week, week and a half, kind of doing that. I had a really good pace.
Were you one of those guys going to a Starbucks and being like, oh yeah, I'm writing my novel, I'm going to be famous?
No, right here. Just okay. Right here. But yeah, I wrote every day. I had a word goal in mind. Sometimes I would write as much as like 1,500 words a day. Like if I was kind of doing a passage of a chapter and I was kind of really feeling it and I didn't want to stop, I just kept going, you know, because like, hey, you reached word goal. If you want to go more, that's a bonus.
Well, you're going to be venturing into that realm, the indie author scene, actually.
Yeah, I'm going to be going like really diving deep into like the book side of Iron Age, BookTube, BookTok. It's a new arena for me, so wish me luck.
I'll be honest here, that's probably the side that has less drama, actually. There's really nobody doing it.
I don't know. I've heard there's a lot of drama in BookTok. I don't know about BookTube.
Lord. How in the world could there be drama in written novels? That's just, by the way, there's drama everywhere you go in life, actually.
There's drama in crocheting groups.
Lord. There's actually drama in knitting groups, women who knit.
Yeah, I actually heard a report of this. Apparently there's like a crocheting group, and one of the people were like, what are we gonna do about the racism in the knitting group? We need to, like, you know, say that like the knitting group is all inclusive, and the people are like, we just wanna knit. We don't care if you're gay, we don't care if you're trans. If you knit, you're in the group. Like,
yeah, people have that like weird self-importance to tell you, hey, I'm this. And it's like, what if I just don't give a fuck? What if I just don't even like you? What if I don't even care, actually? You know?
Yeah. And that's how a lot of these movements, like, I don't care if you're gay. Can you heal me? Can you keep aggro? Can you keep your DPS numbers up? Okay, cool. Get on the team.
Yeah. And just want to say, thank you guys for checking out this episode of the Iron Man podcast. It was great to have Nick back on again. We were going to do this last Tuesday, but I was on vacation, you know?
You're too busy clout chasing.
Yeah. I was too busy sucking off Iron Oxide and Professor Savage Dad for clout. Potentially. And I was in Vegas.
I like Savage Dad. He's cool.
You know, I was in Vegas. I was going back to my hotel room and these two girls I met at a bar followed me there, and we had a lot of fun. Just saying, a lot of sex.
Whatever happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. So what happened between you and Professor Dad
didn't happen. All right, so if you're watching this episode live, we'll be back on for Tuesday's Big Showdown. We're going to have some fun there. Got to see who's going to be on that show later on tonight. Or I might already have some big guests on. You literally never know. We just passed 400 episodes on this podcast. So we're going to be heading to episode 500 very, very soon. And we're going to end up having some more awesome guests and awesome time on the show. Make sure to back 2100 Samurai. Follow a friend.
And you can sign up right now. We're literally one person away from hitting our next goal.
And if you sign up, and if you say MSK sent you, Nick's going to give me... Oh, nothing, actually.
I'm going to give you two thumbs up.
Oh, Lord. Well, we'll see you guys later. Have a great day, everyone. Goodbye. Deuces.